Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Stranger than your sympathy, and this is my apology.
I know I can speak for all Americans when I say our hearts are with the people of New Orleans after the despicable attack that occurred in the early morning hours. To all the families of those who were killed, to all those who were injured, to all the people of New Orleans who are grieving today, I want you to know I grieve with you. Our nation grieves with you. We're going to stand with you as you mourn and as you heal in the weeks to come.
You know, I've said this before, and I will say it again. This is actually one of the things I think President Biden actually does quite well. He's very good at grief situations. He's very good at adverse news. Of course, he's experienced quite a bit of tragedy in his own personal life. And, you know, he's the right voice when bad things like this happen. And I appreciated his very short comments for about 4.5 minutes last night about the terror attack in New Orleans.
I want to thank our brave first responders and law enforcement personnel who stopped the attacker in his tracks before he could kill or injure even more people. And I want to thank you to everyone at the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, including the FBI, for working nonstop to investigate this heinous act.
Yeah, and of course, at that time, the FBI had long since 1 p.m. This was 6 or 7 o'clock last night, I think, something like that. I don't watch these things always live. I sometimes catch them after the fact. But, you know, he talked about this being a continuing threat, unknown people, the FBI is investigating.
The FBI is leading the investigation to determine what happened, why it happened, whether there was any continuing threat to public safety.
Well, since we know that there were pipe bombs or other kinds of remote operable explosive devices, IEDs, left around the French Quarter, two at least of which so far have been confirmed disabled, that were apparently laid by other people, three men and a woman is a couple of reports that I had read, there's clearly an ongoing threat because we don't have everybody in custody unless they do and they're not telling us, which may be. Okay, maybe. I mean, you know, always keep in mind that what we don't know, we don't know. And if I were law enforcement and I had four people in custody and I was interrogating them, I don't know that I'd tell the public that, because that means any of their possible collaborators might be clued into the fact that they might be exposed, and you don't want to tip them to that. So, you know, always aware that there may be a lot of things that we do not know, but the things we do know.
Here's what we know so far. The FBI has reported to me the killer was an American citizen born in Texas. He served in the United States Army on active duty for many years. He also served in the Army Reserve until a few years ago. The FBI also reported to me that mere hours before the attack, he posted videos on social media indicating that he was inspired by ISIS, expressing a desire to kill, The ISIS flag was found in his vehicle, which he rented to conduct this attack. Possible explosives were found in the vehicle as well, and more explosives were found nearby.
And there's going to be a distinction between inspired by versus actually led by, organized by, ordered by ISIS. That's going to be a question that is open at the moment is, you know, was he self-radicalized or was he, you know, contacted, recruited, trained, encouraged, funded, all of those kinds of things. And I'd give credit to the president where it's due and give credit to him for, I think, saying the right words about this incident and the future and what's going on in New Orleans at the time last night.
New Orleans is a place unlike any other place in the world. It's a city full of charm and joy. So many people around the world love New Orleans because of its history, its culture, and above all, its people. So I know, while this person committed a terrible assault on the city, the spirit of our New Orleans will never, never, never be defeated. It always will shine forth. We've seen that time and time again throughout its history, and I know we'll see it again in the days and weeks ahead. May God bless the people of New Orleans. God bless our police and our first responders. May God protect our troops, and we'll keep you fully contemporaneously informed. Thank you.
Good. All good. I appreciate that. And then he ran away from the questions that they were trying to ask. But that's fine. It's kind of what we've come to expect. 614 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Going back to that 1 p.m. press conference yesterday, which was, I'm not even sure. John, you were saying you don't think they did the 11 a.m. press conference?
No, I don't think they did because I kept waiting
for that. Okay, yeah. I need to go check and see. I just thought I had missed it or hadn't been paying attention at the time. So I just watched the 1 p.m. press conference, which was mostly a catastrophe, honestly. Some parts of it were quite good, but mostly a catastrophe. Just in terms of handling the press. But one of the big questions, and we had talked about this yesterday with Mike Wood, was the issue of the bollards and the cop cars and the dump trucks and just, you know, how do you protect a street festival? How do you protect people in the public who are out drinking and partying in a place like Bourbon Street? And there was a lot of information about this in the 1 o'clock press conference, and I wanted to talk about it because it was kind of not the first thing that they wanted to bring up, but there was one particular reporter who was very good about this. But I'm going to give you a bit of a tone here. Okay, this is kind of how the press conference was being conducted. You're going to hear the voice of Governor Jeff Landry here responding to a question.
I know there was obviously gunfire exchange. So I guess how many victims were shot, and then how many were injured?
Look, again, let me reiterate both Special Agent Duncan and Senator Kennedy. There's a lot of I get that y'all want to know minute details. What we don't want to do is impede this investigation or spend any time talking about things that don't get us closer to hunting these folks down and securing this city. And so at a particular point in time, we will release as much information as we can. But at this time, in relation to the investigation, I would ask y'all to refrain from those.
Why can't you say who got shot and who got stabbed or who got run over? I mean, that's not you can say we don't know, but that's not like a get defensive and don't answer because that's going to impede the investigation.
Rachel Wolf from The Wall Street Journal, you said you are confident there are multiple suspects involved. What makes you confident in that?
Well, like, why would we tell you that?
Okay. I just give you a little sense of the tone, okay? But there was a whole conversation about the bollards and the wedges and stuff, and I want to give you as much of that information as I can. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing smoothly. Just minor delays if you're on Highway 29 northbound right around the Airport Boulevard intersection right there. Just a minor delay. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, John. So various voices of press kind of asking questions about the bollards and the wedges, which are these physical accordion type devices that can raise and lower that you, like if you've ever gone to a secure perimeter, maybe you haven't, but I have recently with the RNC and the DNC, they're very robust physical barriers. Like they have them around the White House and stuff. And that was when they talk about wedges, that's what they're talking about. But here goes, this is talking about the bollards, you know, the street poles that can retract, removed, okay, that physically, I mean, outside of Walmart, outside of a, you know, Target, outside of on Garden and Palafox, you see them right there, okay? So anyway, this became a focal point of the conversation at 1 o'clock yesterday.
Usually in parts of the French Quarter, specifically in parts of Bourbon Street, there are bollards. We're hearing that some of those may have been down because of repairs. Can you speak to that? And maybe was there any backup option of putting a truck there or an NOPD car there?
Well, let me tell you, I'm going to let the mayor answer. I want you to know that's one of the first things I thought of this morning when the mayor called me, okay? And I will tell you that whatever the problem was is going to be solved.
Okay, that is not reassuring, and if he doesn't know, he should not be talking. The governor should... They should not have had the governor out of his very first comments, and that should have been the end from him. It would have been should have been run by either the mayor or by the chief of police or whoever, but not him. Or even by the FBI would have been the right one, Lethia Duncan. But okay, here goes. Mayor LaToya Cantrell talking about the bollards.
As it relates to the bollards on Bourbon Street, over 10 years ago, the city of New Orleans implemented an infrastructure project placing bollards on Bourbon Street. Shortly thereafter, the malfunctions of those bollards ensued, from Mardi Gras beads on down. But the New Orleans Police Department, of course, deemed them inefficient because they did not operate the way that they were intended to do.
Millions of dollars spent on these bollards. I read one account had $30 million on the bollards. I don't know how that's possible, but okay. And they didn't work and were broken.
Because the city of New Orleans is hosting Super Bowl this year, it gave the city of New Orleans an opportunity to go further and deeper with infrastructure improvements, as we've been talking about. So as a result of that, we were able to build in bollard replacement into our Super Bowl infrastructure package. And because of that, the city of New Orleans has moved forward with that infrastructure that is nearing completion.
$40 million as part of a safety plan installed in December of 2017. So they were not the whole total cost of it, but they didn't work. And now, because they got the Super Bowl coming, they're fixing them, apparently.
Bollards were not up because they are near completion, with the expectation of being completed, of course, by Super Bowl, way before Super Bowl. But that is the reason.
So the bollards were not up because they don't work, and they're in the process of being replaced by ones that do work for the Super Bowl.
All right. So we have been aware of the bollard situation for a long time, and we did indeed harden those target areas where the bollards are. We have patrol cars out there as a hard target, as well as with barriers.
This is the superintendent of police and Kirkpatrick. So when they didn't have the bollards working yesterday because they were not up, or the day before, sorry. Yesterday, sorry. They had cop cars out in front of them. And again, I don't know why they didn't have dump trucks, massive. I mean, this is what we do in Pensacola. Again, little old Pensacola by comparison. You put massive physical barriers in place.
Now, I want to share with y'all, if you did not know, that this particular terrorist drove around onto the sidewalk and got around the hard target, where he did have a car there. We had barriers there, we had officers there, and they still got around.
Again, this is at 7 a.m. It's one thing, but at 1 o'clock, they're like acting like this is some big surprise that a guy would drive on the sidewalk. We know the other attacks and elsewhere that, I mean, that's an obvious alternative. It's okay. All right. I'm just listening. Okay. And then remember the wedges.
Now, the wedges that you see out there as well, we knew that that had malfunction problems. And I want you to understand, let's say we put the wedge up and it got stuck. There is no way that ambulance could get in or out. People couldn't get in and out. So we knew that these were malfunction. So we did indeed have a plan, but the terrorist defeated it.
What was the plan? The bollards don't work for a decade. The wedges don't work. I actually watched a video of a guy reporting on them in 2019 when they were, I guess, first getting it. I think it was 2019. Maybe it was a little bit later. But, you know, showing them working up and down. And those are pretty robust. Like I said, the Secret Service uses those, even, you know, temporary install ones when they do their events like the DNC and the RNC. You see them around the White House. Those are very effective. And by the way, they tend to go all the way across the street. So, like, you know, but what about the sidewalk? How wide is the sidewalk? Is that a problem? Did they think about this? Why didn't they think about this, right?
We recognize we got a problem right here, right?
This is, again, the governor.
We're going to fix it. It is going to be a top priority as we go into the Super Bowl in Mardi Gras. And the solution that we're going to come up with is going to be a permanent one. It's going to be placed into the standard operating procedure of having major events and securing that quarter.
Every time he talks, I feel less comfortable. I feel less reassured every time he explains.
You were just talking about bollards that are being repaired. Talk about a lift gate that are replaced and then a lift gate that's not been working. Was there a vehicle in place of that lift gate last night? Were there things in place of those bollards which are being repaired?
Sure, the chief spoke to the plan in place, and that is yes.
That was indeed.
So anything that is currently in the midst of being repaired had a backup replacement.
It had vehicles and officers were there where all of those bollards. Ballast have been, we had that, we knew. So we did have it. And like I said, in this particular case, terrorists just went all the way around up onto the sidewalk.
What about for the lift gate? Was there a vehicle like backing in and out to block that lift gate area, or was that just down and open? That's what we heard from WIP.
Chief, Captain. The reason I'm calling the captain, he's the captain over that district, and that is a question I'm going to let him address for you.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Captain LaJean Roberts of the 8th District. Yes, we did have a vehicle strategically placed right in front of the wedge, preventing access onto the roadway.
Okay, so they were at least working on, or had that in place. That's good. Were they cop cars? Were they dump trucks? I think is worth asking. They don't explain, but that's okay. The captain is finally giving, you know, some definitive answers about this stuff.
And in terms of the framework of security that was already in place on Bourbon Street, I know this is an ongoing project of improvement, but with how that was all aligned, was someone getting up on a sidewalk considered impossible or nearly impossible, or was this not something you expected you would have to account for?
Of course, it wasn't something we expected to account for. The bollards are, they're actually wedges. They're strategically placed five locations throughout the French Quarter on the roadway. This particular terrorist drove onto the sidewalk behind the police car to gain access to the 100 block of Bourbon Street.
So if you're worried about someone ever driving down Bourbon Street, why weren't you worried about someone driving up the sidewalk in the same way, or at least bracing for you the same way?
Okay. Yes. No. All right, look. We could go on what ifs forever. This is evil. And that guy could have easily gone down the sidewalk of Canal Street, where there were a ton of pedestrians on there as well.
Oh, good. There's other vulnerabilities you're announcing to the world, too. Like I said, every time the governor is opening his, we could go on hypotheticals for, no, these are the right questions. This guy should get an award for journalism. He's asking the right, exactly the right questions.
And there are. That's right. Right.
Hold on a second. We got to move on.
Just want you to know.
We got to move on.
However, we recognize, I said earlier, that where there are defects in this system, we are going to be transparent, and we are going to address them with the city and make sure that we fill those gaps as best we can.
The city isn't to blame for the attack, but the city's job is to protect people from predictable bad behavior by terrorists or other people who want to kill people. And all of this is predictable. All of this is understood. All of these are not surprises. And the fact that they had malfunctioning equipment for a decade and didn't, what, their defenses, their explanations, they didn't think about somebody might drive up on the sidewalk? I mean, are you kidding? And then when these questions start to get asked and answered, they want to move on in the press conference? I mean, it's very troubling about New Orleans and about the capabilities of the leadership and the police force there. That was my takeaway. John, do you disagree?
No, not at all. I just your point on.
I wish I didn't have to take this particular position, but everything that comes out makes me less reassured. What does that mean for the Super Bowl? What does that mean for the bowl game tonight? John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by the Watson Law Firm. If you've been injured in a car accident, you can visit watsonfirm.com. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly at the moment. Even 98 looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Pep Talk? What's Pep Talk?
It's the Pensacola Expert Panel.
Experts? Experts in real estate?
Yes, that's us, Angela. We are the Pep Talk for real estate.
What will we talk about, Will?
We'll talk about the real estate industry.
Well, we don't just want to answer our own questions.
We want to answer the listeners' questions. Tune in today at 10 a.m. and we'll talk about real estate.
And whatever real estate questions you have.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Tune in to Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, Sundays at 1 with Paul Roberts. Find out how their certified advisors can help you enjoy your retirement income. Financial security is about more than investments. Roberts Wealth can help you live your values and trust your future planning every step of the way. Don't miss Retire Right Radio, hosted by Roberts Wealth Management, this Sunday at 1 p.m.
Investment advisory services offered by Foundations Investment Advisor Services, LLC, SEC. Registered advisors.
Febreze. As a rideshare driver, I love keeping my car smelling fresh and clean. So when I'm driving, I only trust Febreze Car Vent Clips, featuring three distinct intensity settings, because it's that little touch that sets me apart. I can turn the intensity down for subtle freshness, or I can turn it up for when I want lots of scent. So whether it's set to low, medium, or high, with Febreze Car, I know my car's going to smell amazing. Mm-hmm. Which keeps my driver rating right where it belongs. Picking up! Oscar! La, 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 la.
The Dave Ramsey Show, weeknight 7 to 10 before WEAR TV News on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Vern, there's something on your neck.
Yeah, right. I'm not falling for that one, LaChance.
No, Vern, there is something on your neck.
It's leech.
Leeches! Oh, my God!
Hey, you! Watch this!
Good morning, 6:29, News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Got a text in here. Somebody says, complacency, incompetence, and corruption greatly exacerbated this tragedy. I can't disagree. Cannot disagree based on what we know so far. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
President Biden's awarding Liz Cheney with the Presidential Citizens Medal today. She and 18 other individuals will be at the White House to receive that award, which is given to citizens who have performed exemplary deeds of service for their country or fellow citizens. And Andrew, we've got some information on the first baby of the year here in Pensacola. At Ascension Sacred Heart, 1209 on New Year's morning.
Nice.
Everly was born. Her parents, Megan Mapolis and Brian Allen. And apparently Megan's birthday was New Year's Eve as well. So Congratulations to them.
You know what this reminds me of the more I think about it? The Butler attack and the Secret Service's response and incompetence and all of that. That's what it reminds me of.
Chris Foster, investigators are looking into whether a New Year's Eve celebration truck attack in New Orleans is linked to a New Year's Day truck explosion outside Trump International Hotel in Las Vegas.
Police say they have identified the person who was driving the Tesla Cybertruck yesterday. It is believed the driver was a Colorado Springs native with military experience. The person was killed in the explosion outside the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas. Seven others were injured. Authorities say they found gasoline and camp fuel canisters as well as large firework mortars in the truck.
Fox's Chandley Painter, at least 12 people are shot and killed in Montenegro.
Among the dead, a bar owner, his two children, and other family members. Attacker Adso Martinovich fled, but was later surrounded by police and killed himself with a shot to the head.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 6:31 at News Radio 92.3. It is 40 degrees right now. We've got clear skies this morning in Pensacola. Well, there were people from Florida celebrating the new year in New Orleans this week, and one Milton family was there, but luckily avoided most of that terror attack from their hotel room.
We don't really have words. We are shocked.
That is Shara Willett. She talked with Channel 3. They were staying in the French Quarter at the Caesars Palace Hotel. She said family and friends started calling moments after that attack happened. She said they were most likely planning to head back home due to the uncertainty of the situation after everything that happened. Well, the Pensacola Beach Polar Bear Plunge happened yesterday. There were hundreds of dippers and spectators at the Paradise Bar and Grill on the Santa Rosa Sound. Many of the attendees dressed in costume migrated to the island to participate in the tradition. Other polar bear plunge or polar plunge locations happened as well. There were two of them in Navarre, one at Windjammers on the pier and one at Juana's Pagodas, another on Perdido Key at the Floribama. That's the largest polar plunge on the Gulf Coast. Some local reaction to that terror attack in New Orleans yesterday.
Our prayers are with those in New Orleans, not only the victims and their families, but the first responders that are dealing with this tragedy.
PPD's Mike Wood, the FBI, of course, still investigating. They are calling that incident an act of terror now. Spokesperson Aletha Duncan said at a news conference the suspect was 42-year-old Shamsud Dinjabar, a U.S.-born citizen. A former Secret Service agent seems to believe that the incidents in New Orleans and Las Vegas should serve as wake-up calls. Palm Beach County's Tim Miller talked yesterday about apparent terrorist attacks that have killed at least a dozen people. He said for many years, Americans have gone where they wanted without worrying if the police will be there. Now, Miller says he would challenge everybody not to have that attitude. His advice, he says, was to ask yourself when you go somewhere how you would quickly exit if you need to. Well, celebratory gunfire being blamed for two deaths across the state during New Year's Eve celebrations in Miami-Dade County. A 10-year-old Yanelez Magoya was hit in the head by a stray bullet in Osceola County. 56-year-old Carmen Akoa was killed at a home in Kissimmee. Police say Akoa and Mangua were each hit by stray bullets fired by somebody celebrating the New Year. So far, no arrests have been made. Silver Airways has filed for bankruptcy. The company says they'll be securing additional funding and resources and restructuring. The airline does operate flights out of Pensacola. They say all tickets are still valid and their operations will continue as normal. It is 6:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our traffic on the fives with John Pickens.
Brought to you by The Generator Source, powering Pensacola's businesses with industrial generators to commercial backup systems with the most trusted brands. Expert installation and 24/7 support, GeneratorSource.com. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 are flowing very smoothly. Just a minor delay on Highway 90 as you go through the Pea Ridge area. But other than that, everything's looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Now our Channel 3 weather forecast.
Beautiful sunny skies today with a temperature near 61 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 43 degrees. Keeping the sunny skies around through Friday with a few passing clouds, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, high near 61. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 35 degrees. On Saturday, sunny skies with a high near 54. Stay connected at Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
And thank you very much, Brooke. Right now, again, we've got 40 in clear skies in Pensacola. It is 41 in Gulf Breeze. And we've got 38 degrees now reported in Milton. Our next news at 7 o'clock, breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Treasury yields were lower on the first trading day of the new year as investors considered what could lie ahead for markets in the coming months. The yield on the 10-year Treasury was down by 4 points at 4.533%. There are some new travel changes going into effect in 2025. Starting May 7th, the Department of Homeland Security will enforce the use of real IDs at airports and some federal facilities. In addition, new federal regulations took effect that require airlines to make it easier for ticketed passengers to get refunds after flight cancellations or other significant changes. The most concerning headwind for South Korea's economy in 2025 is if President-elect Donald Trump's proposed import tariffs come to fruition. That's according to BOK official Sun Yung Lee. Based on the country's robust economy over the past 20 years, Lee says he is cautiously optimistic about economic conditions. Futures are moderately higher. That's Your Money Now.
If you're living with dry age-related macular degeneration or dry AMD, you may be at risk for developing geographic atrophy or GA. GA can be unpredictable and progress rapidly, leading to irreversible vision loss. Now there's something you can do to
slow it down and get it going slower.
Izervay is proven to slow GA progression.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Izervay or Avacincaptad Pegol is a prescription eye injection used to treat GA. Don't take it if you have an infection or active swelling in or around your eye. Izervay can cause eye infection, retinal detachment, or increased risk of wet AMD. Izervay may temporarily increase eye pressure. Your vision may be impaired after an eye injection or exam. Don't delay. Ask your doctor about Izervay today.
Izervay gets GA going slower.
Visit Izervay.com. That's Izervay.com.
Splash Magazine covers the coast like the Gulf of Mexico. Each month, Splash Magazine offers a calendar of events, plus tips on where to shop, dine, and play. Learn about the month's special events, live entertainment, and interesting local people. Learn how to catch fish with Captain Dave Yelverton. See what is worth watching on your streaming services. Tom Nolan will tell you the latest. Find out how to dress for the changing Florida weather with Jen Wells. Get the most out of the Emerald Coast by reading Splash Magazine each month. For more information, call Gulf Breeze News at 850-932-8986 or visit GulfBreezeNews.com online.
Hi, my name is Michael Dylan Thompson, candidate for Congress here in my home district. I'm proud to be the only candidate who voters petitioned to be on the ballot. Every other candidate paid over $10,000 to qualify, often using either lobbyist or special interest money. As a born and raised Pensacola native, I will fight for my district. I will fix the insurance crisis created by establishment politicians, and I will protect our brave service members who keep America free. We don't need outsiders bringing Washington, D.C. corruption into Northwest Florida. We need new ideas and fresh leadership to fight for us. As your congressman, I pledge to always put Florida first. There's a critical election on January 28th, and I need your vote. This is our chance to take back our voice and send a clear message to the career politicians. We won't let special interests decide our future. Together, we can restore accountability, protect our values, and secure a stronger future for Northwest Florida. I'm Michael Dillon Thompson, and I'm proud to approve this message.
Paid for by Michael Dillon Thompson for Congress, Republican.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
With Okaloosa County winning the bid for the ship, they have three locations within their county waters that they're looking at. One is further east towards Bay and Walton County, one is straight out, and one is further west towards Escambia County and closer proximity to the Oriskany. So conversations that we've had internally with the dive charter groups, between my staff and the Okaloosa County staff, we knew that Bay and Walton County were going to had offered up to $3 million to choose a location that was on the east side, closer to them. And while we wouldn't have really the ability to compete with them financially, we did have the $1 million that had been committed. And if we invest that with Okaloosa County as a true partner, and have them refit on the west side closer to us within proximity of the Pensacola Pass, that's attainable by dive charter groups.
This is one of the, in my opinion, best little underreported good news stories to happen in Escambia County in the last several months. This is from the TDC meeting, the Tourism Development, I always forget, Councilor Commission. Anyway, they deal with the bed tax, how to spend the bed tax money. They recommended the county how to spend it. And this is Darren Schaefer, the CEO of Visit Pensacola, talking about the SS United States, which we had tried to get here and did not get here. But saying that, look, they've been working with Okaloosa County, and Okaloosa County is willing to refit on the west side of their domain, which would basically be close enough for us to be able to send our charter dive boats out there to use it. And all we got to do to get them to put it to the west is, you know, put up $1 million, $200,000 every year for 5 years in advertising, which is a way better bargain than trying to spend $10 or $13 million to acquire it ourselves.
We felt we could also then offer some joint marketing together. While we wouldn't be able to match the same dollar amounts, we would be competitive and feel like that 1-2 punch between the Oriskany and the SS United States would be a huge marketing advantage for Okaloosa County as well as ourselves. So we've been working with their staff, looking at if we made this kind of proposal, if we were to do these type of things, would this be agreeable? And that's been the indication that we've received.
Good work. I mean, it's not how we intended it, but it turns out to be quite good. Andy Ross, now you dive charters.
I just want to let you know I fully support the opportunity that Visit Pensacola is working with Okaloosa County. I know the three areas that they were planning on sinking the wreck, and where they're putting it closer to the west here is not much further than the Oriskany and is very much well within range to run charters where we won't really have to put a bigger price tag on it.
Yeah, so they can go there just as easily as they go to the Oriskany, which means it's almost like we're getting it. Not quite, but almost.
We went to a dive show in Las Vegas here recently, and the buzz about that wreck is really phenomenal, and that puts a big pin on the map for Pensacola, not only for that wreck, but also, again, for the Oriskany. And I think it's going to be tremendous to get some of these high-dollar tech divers out who spend a lot more money than than a lot of people. I don't know where they come up with their money, but they're always wanting to go, and they don't care how much it costs.
They're willing to spend the money. Let's give them something to spend it on. Back to Darren Schaefer.
Right now, let's start with the USS Oriskany. So the Oriskany is located about 24 miles from the Pensacola Pass, and the Oriskany is 34 miles from the Destin Pass. The SS United States will be about 21 miles from the Destin Pass, 30 miles from the Pensacola Pass. The distance between the two ships is 12 miles.
I know it's a lot of math. You don't need to draw your triangles or anything. But it basically, the short takeaway is not much farther away than the Oriskany, and the distance between them, 12 miles, actually can be helpful for people that might want to, I guess, I'm not a diver, so if I say something stupid, you correct me at 437-1620. My ears won't clear is why I can't learn to scuba. I would love to, but I cannot clear my ear. I had so many ear infections as a kid that they don't work right in that regard. But, you know, if I say something stupid, you correct me, 437-1620. But what he was saying is that actually it works well to have that distance between them.
When you dive a ship like that and you come back up, you need an hour before the next dive. And so diving both ships in a day is very possible. You take that hour to go from one ship to the other ship, then to do your second dive. And wouldn't even have gone down this path unless we had the commitment, and it's an acceptable distance and within the dive community.
Yeah, so apparently that's actually a benefit to have it not just next door, essentially, but to have it at some distance because, you know, you go down, you come up, you recover for an hour with the transit or whatever, and then you can go down for the other dive.
Yes, and just reiterating here that this $1 million sits tight and until the west location is chosen.
Until that ship is on the ground.
So
it has to be reefed, and it can't be, whoops, it's 40 miles away. If it's 40 miles away, then we wouldn't pay that money.
I love that expression, on the ground, on the bottom of the Gulf is what he means. Until it's sunk at the right place, no money would be outlaid for the advertising. It's all waiting for that to happen. Continue this in just a second. John Pickens has got traffic on the fives. John?
Just one accident to let you know about if you're on 87 and Whiting Field right there at the entrance. We have an accident. It's onto the side of the road, and I'm not seeing any delays, but I wanted you to be aware of it. Other than that, traffic looks good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the five.
Thanks so much, John. Talking about the SS United States, now the deal is with Okaloosa County. They're going to acquire it and reef it, and then it's going to be in a location to the west of their possible locations. They had three, but they're going to put it to the west, close enough to us that we can send boats out to it from Pensacola Pass, and all we got to do is pay maybe $1 million to help joint advertise it, which certainly benefits us anyway. It's not even like we're giving them money for the acquisition. I really feel like this is, you know how they always make this joke, like the best boat to have is your buddy's boat? You know? This is like your buddy buying a boat. And then he's going to take you out every weekend. I mean, you know, this is genuinely great news. That was Jen Brer, by the way, the city councilwoman Jen Brer talking there in a moment. My boss, Mary Hoxing, sits on the TDC.
When do you really think it could be here?
Well, like they were talking about prior to now. I mean, that ship should have, they had planned on moving it. They only waited like they did to just kind of get out of hurricane season before bringing it down around Florida. So now it's just a matter of time of them getting released, getting the Coast Guard approval. And then they were talking about having that sunk late summer, early fall.
I mean, within a year. That's fantastic. So what caused some of the hangups? And this is kind of, Darren's going to be very diplomatic here, okay, Darren Schaefer. But he's basically going to be like, yeah, some of this ran into, you know, East Coast politics.
There was press recently, a few days ago, that said, I guess the original plan was to move the ship starting November 15th.
It's David Baer.
But that day, that's when the Coast Guard determined that it may not have suitable stability to move it. And so they're...
Yep, there's all of a sudden problems. I'm not saying anything about how business is done on the East Coast, but...
Yes, you are.
He's from the West Coast.
These problems all of a sudden appear.
You know, so the Coast Guard was fine, he's saying, and I don't know, but he's saying, you know, and sounds like somebody, you know, got worked up about this and, you know, threw some impediments in the way. So, and then again, that was David Baer, the chair of the TDC. And then the question of, you know, the vote to actually approve this money.
Thank you. Motion carries. Thank you so much. And thank you for the work you've done. That saved the county a whole lot of money to get Okaloosa County to pay for it. And also, I think it's a great idea to partner with them on the marketing.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a huge win. This is a huge win for Visit Pensacola, for the dive community, for our area that depends on tourism so much. And I love it. I mean, this is all upside. Like, this is a really good development. Had a couple of texts come in here. Somebody says, this is a great update on the location of the ship reef. Didn't know this. Might be time to reopen discussions on doing a new pass on the east side of Navarre through the Eglin property. Yeah, careful. That's a, you know, third rail of Santa Rosa politics. But that was my thought, too, is you can go all the way over there. You can come here. Right in the middle would be nice. But no, that's not, you know, that's no, not going to happen. Somebody else says it's wild. They've got all this money to burn to sink a derelict ship. But you get all you get is puzzled stares when you're improving Highway 98. The money from tourism development tax cannot be used for anything but tourism development. So no matter how many tens of millions of dollars they might have, they can't use it on roads. Well, they could maybe use it for I haven't read the statute, so I can't. But my understanding is that there are some parts of public infrastructure it might be able to be used on. You know, things like the replacement of the beach bridges, maybe. But it's got to be tourism related. It's got to be related to cultivating, developing tourism, either in the getting there or the keeping people safe or the advertising and marketing or making the thing itself worth getting to. But you can't just use it for roads or salaries or, you know, it's not fungible money. 650 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you are thinking about that next vehicle, trying to decide, you know, what you want to do and if now is the right time or if you want to wait or if you can wait, I always recommend maybe 5-6 months even ahead of when you got it. Because you never want to be shopping for something when you got it because it's pressure, stress, you don't have a car, or maybe it's broken down, whatever. Go ahead of time. Get as close to a decision as you can before you need to, and then you can be in control. You know, and you can say, Frontier, I know you got a lot of great cars, you know, 300 different vans and SUVs and sedans on the lot, and I like this one, but I'm willing to pay a little bit more to get lower miles. I would rather pay a little bit less. I'll take higher miles. Can you go find one for me? I want the, you know, I don't really need the EX. I'll take the LX or vice versa, you know, whatever. They can go shopping for it. They're buying cars all the time at auctions or other places, and people are bringing cars in all the time. They buy cars, by the way, if you have a good car to sell. So use them as a great resource to start your process, and then you can be in control. Frontier Motors serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway, be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. An IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, submitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us tomorrow at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Hey folks, this is Jimmy Patronis, Florida's Chief Financial Officer, wishing each of you a Merry Christmas. Now, I just received an amazing phone call a few weeks ago that I want to tell you about. President Trump called me and said, Jimmy, I want you to run for Congress. Wow. Yes, the guy who just won a landslide victory defeating the crazy Democrats in Washington, the guy who just got shot, stood back up and said, fight, fight, fight. That guy. President Donald J. Trump told me to run for Congress. Well, my mama didn't raise a dummy, so my response to the president was a very simple, yes, sir. I will run, and we will enact President Trump's agenda. We will secure the border. We will get rid of the woke foolishness in Washington. It's an honor of a lifetime to have President Trump's endorsement. The president can count on me, and so can you. I'm Jimmy Patronis, candidate for Congress, and I approve this message. I'd be honored to have your support. Paid for by Friends of Jimmy Patronis, Inc.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
I hope that when I grow up, I can come to your college and you can be my professor.
Well, actually, I'm just an associate professor.
What does that mean?
It means that I'm less than.
Generally speaking, the movie Wet Hot American Summer is terrible. It's meatballs without the comedy, okay? I mean, it's really not good. But that one line by David Hyde Pierce, you know, from Frasier, oh, that line is hilarious. To me, as a former adjunct, not even an associate professor, it's so true. It means that I'm less than. You were dying, John.
Oh, I know. I
That's
was.
So accurate.
It is.
David Wayne is David Wayne's in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, the driver that died when a Cybertruck blew up outside of a Trump Las Vegas hotel has been identified as an Army veteran from Colorado. Law enforcement sources tell the New York Post that 37-year-old Matthew Livelsberger rented the electric truck that exploded New Year's Day. He was in the driver's seat when that blew up.
Isn't one of the takeaways from this is in all the stuff that was in the back, all the explosives, all the gas, right, all that fireworks and stuff. But also, didn't Elon Musk come out and say they picked the wrong truck to do this with? Because when I look at that truck, it's intact.
It is.
It blew out the window and that's it.
Yeah, yep. They are built very...
I mean, remember the whole, like, you know,
very
throw
sturdy.
What was it, a brick at the window? Right. Or hit it with, like, all that kind of stuff? I mean... Yeah, not the ideal choice for something like that, really. So, and thank goodness, you know, thank goodness.
You know, as an Army veteran myself, I just don't understand how two incidents have been, you know, previous service military
right.
folks. Like, I just, it's just really blowing my mind, you know, trying to put that through my head, how these people are, I mean, I get it, radicalization or whatever's happening, but
that's,
I just
don't
understand.
To me, that's such a theoretical thing. It's hard for me to picture an ordinary American serves in the military and is doing this for their country, and then a couple of years later,
it's just such a polar opposite on your values, and I don't understand how this has happened now twice in, you know, a day.
I have a question for you, but hang on just a second, David, because I actually... Something you reminded me of, I've been wanting to ask you about. John Pickens has traffic on the fives. John?
That's right. No accidents to let you know about right now. I-10, I-110 flowing smoothly. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thanks so much, Sean. People may not realize, I want to remind them, you actually did IED clearance.
Yes.
That's what you did
job.
In Iraq. And so I haven't asked you, but, I mean, you've seen now one incident in New Orleans with IEDs, pipe bombs, et cetera, and you've seen this other incident, which... I mean, we don't know yet, but seems to lend itself to that interpretation. There was also a story, I don't know if you saw this, a story about 150 devices found on a farm in Virginia, unrelated, you know, that the FBI
right.
found and seized. But I don't know. I just want to give you, like, a chance to, you know, based on your expertise and your background, if you had any thoughts about any of this IED stuff or the, you know, I just wanted to give you a chance to comment because I don't think that's come up.
I didn't see the Virginia thing. What type of devices were
they?
They
didn't say, not in any,
really
just, he was manufacturing them in his basement basically. And, you know, a neighbor was worried about him and he'd said some things about wanting to conduct political violence. And it's a story I haven't even had a chance to mention it until just now. It just happens to be kind of in conjunction.
So, like, the types of IEDs that I saw overseas were obviously a lot different than I think what you would probably see domestically. It seems like more here you're seeing New Orleans. They were saying pipe bombs was a, you know, a lot of...
Anarchist cookbook kind of stuff.
That kind of thing. Overseas, it was more military ordnance from old stockpiles that then they were using.
Okay.
There was actually overseas, there was a lot more of the really like kind of more precision made stuff coming out of Iran to the EFPs, which were, you know, really bad.
What's that stand for, EFP?
I can't even remember.
Okay.
But those were more precision made and, you know, would penetrate armored vehicles. And
okay.
That
shape charges,
C4, right.
That kind of stuff. Things that were, like you said, supplied by Iran. Like,
absolutely.
Actually, not just repurposed old munitions, but
right.
things designed to be IEDs.
But I think what you're seeing here, I mean, anything, any of it can be deadly. It's just, I don't know. It's just it's difficult to see that type of stuff popping up more often domestically because it's one of those things you just don't want to see.
Okay, again, only because you worked in this field. Do either of these things, Las Vegas or New Orleans, have, to your eyes, the look of a test case to set up a subsequent incident, or do they seem like the primary incident themselves?
You know, that's tough to say.
Okay.
Because
that's always been my concern is, you know, one incident is bad, but was that meant to be the only thing, or is that meant to see how they respond to set up a sub? You know what I mean? Like,
you know, absolutely. And I mean, even if that was the, you know, primary thing, it's still, you know, it's still a test case as well, because there's still somebody watching.
Right. There,
you know?
Yeah. And you're going to learn from what gets done.
Absolutely.
And adapt. Both sides are going to adapt. Right. All right, David, thanks so much for the update, and thanks for sharing some of your – I don't think everybody knows that about you, and I'm always amazed, to, you know, whenever I think about your experience and expertise in that regard. And also, of course, and I say this, you know, thank you for doing it, because, you know, I know having been around those explosions has had impacts on you too, which, you know, is big stuff. Thanks, man. Listen on.